Hi everybody, it's Patricia, and today the title of our show is Blessed Are the Weird, Visionaries of the Coming Reality, and it's a brilliant book that I just strongly want to recommend that everybody like goes to Amazon while I'm saying the name of the book again. No, it's actually Blessed Are the Weird, A Manifesto for Creatives, and it's by Jacob Nordby, and it was one of those things. I'm sure many of you, you know, when you get, I wake up like at 4 a.m. and I kind of wander around the internet sometimes and I'm getting things done and then all of a sudden something captures my attention. So I don't actually know exactly how I found his book, but the name of it and when I looked at the, you know, the, what do you call it, the table of contents, it just, I just clicked it. I just like had to read it. Jacob is a writer. He's written The Divine Arsonist, A Tale of Awakening, and then this is his most recent book, Blessed Are the Weird, A Manifesto for Creatives. And it's one of those books that's a pleasure to read because he is a poet and a writer. And so it's one of those books you could read again because it evokes what he's speaking of. And it's really brilliant. He's also the founder and teacher of Creative Unbootcamp, a course for writers and those who want to be. And he does intuitive coaching sessions that are designed to help people solve their creative puzzles as well. So, Jacob, I really want to thank you for, you know, when we reached out to you, too, you were so welcoming. You know, it was kind of like a, you know, the connection was already clear. So I want to thank you for saying yes.
Oh, thanks for that amazing introduction, Patricia. I'm really happy to be here. And I've loved, just before the show began, you know, the last couple of months talking with you and with Kyle, back and forth by email. It's been a pleasure. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you. So we are, so one thing, I looked up the definition of the word weird, which I mean, when people have said, you know, things like that I was weird, or I always felt that was a compliment. I mean, I never felt that was as a derogatory statement. But I never looked at the definition. It actually says something suggesting something supernatural, uncanny, unearthly, or otherworldly, which is kind of great. I mean, that's in a way what you're saying. And basically in your book, you know, you're pointing to the outliers, the creatives, the weird ones, you know, the poets, the various kind of visionary misfits that have always worked either alone or on the fringes of things. And at this point, hopefully, there are way more of us ready to usher in a new world. So we're going to talk about that. So first of all, yeah, just why don't you begin with, you know, because writing a book, having just completed one that'll come out in the fall, you know, it's a big deal. You know, I mean, you don't just write it on any old topic. Because it's like giving birth to a child. So what led you to write this one, Blessed Are the Weird?
Yeah, Patricia, and congratulations on your new book. What an accomplishment. God, that does takes everything out of you, doesn't it?
It does.
So I feel like the best way to start is just to read the short piece that started this whole thing back in 2012, and then I'll explain just briefly how it came to be. But I was driving along in Austin, Texas, where I was living, and these words just started to happen, and I as my memory serves, I pulled over and found a scrap of an envelope and literally true and wrote it down on the back of an envelope. These words, blessed are the weird people, poets, misfits, writers, mystics, heretics, painters, and troubadours, for they teach us to see the world through different eyes. Mm. And that came about from this. I was driving along feeling my otherness, feeling my outsideness that I had always felt, Patricia, for my whole life, mm-hmm. and how hard I had struggled to somehow find a place in the world. And I was in a space for the first time in my life where I had accepted that place rather than struggle with it, rather than try to wear the garments of you know, what we might call the normal world. I would actually, you know, let go of a lot of the trappings of previous of success and businesses that I'd owned and all these things. And I was just living this very, very simple life in Austin, Texas, you know, far away from my hometown of Boise, Idaho. And So those words came through, and I wrote them for myself. I mean, I wrote them because I could feel these different archetypes living inside of me, these writers and painters and all these different, you know, folks. And then I shared it on Facebook or something, and, you know, I didn't think much of it. It just felt good. And then it started to take off, and it shared, you know, and then other people started to make their own versions of it. And it got shared thousands and then tens of thousands. And then now it's been shared millions of times. And I didn't even realize at the time, you know, I was just writing this for myself, that there were so many people out there for whom that would ring true. And so I began to realize, oh, I need to write more around this. Like, this isn't just a little snippet or a poem or something. There's more to this, and it represented an entire body of thought and work that I've been up to for a long time.
Wow, that's interesting. And I'm not surprised that it went viral. I'm not surprised.
Well,
actually.
I was.
It's interesting. Yeah, no, I got it. I got that you were, but it's kind of like, yeah, that, you know, I'm sure, I mean, it's such a beautiful way that you express it too, that it, you know, it came through as a whole piece. So,
yeah.
So what do you think? So now that you've been writing, you know, you wrote the book, and we're going to get into different pieces, but you're also, an attractor, you know, a strange attractor for, the people who are resonating with what you're saying. Like, what are you seeing? You know, do you think this is a different time for, because there've always been poets, visionaries. I mean, some people were burned, you know, women were burned at the stake, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
It actually has been a dangerous position often to be in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel, you know, I feel we are living in, one of my central sort of hypotheses here is that we're living in a new Renaissance, an era that brings with it tremendous advantages, Patricia. And like probably any other Renaissance, if you look back through history, you know, any other Renaissance, there were only a few, generally speaking, who would wake up inside of that time of peak potential energy, shall we say, and say, oh my God, we have leverage right now. We have, you know, more potential right now than other times. And whether they said those words or thought those words or not, the point is they took advantage of the rise in the tide. But most people during times of high tide are just like in times of low tide or any other time, largely unaware of it. I feel like we're in a time right now when more of us are awakening to the level of energy that is here. And more of us are realizing, oh, wow, for the first time in human history, as far as we know, there is more safety to come out and express ourselves individually. There is more freedom of that expression. There are more tools available. There's more connection available. And at the same time, it's kind of like you can starve to death at a banquet. We're also in this just absolute tsunami of information and demands.
It's true. Interesting. All right. So speak more. So I want, we'll keep like this high tide, you know, we'll come back to that, but can you speak a little bit more about who are the, you know, so people can find themselves in what you're saying? Because I know that when, I think one of the greatest gifts that writers give is to illuminate things that people can't express for themselves.
Hmm.
Like when you hear you say it and then you go, oh yeah, I can see that in myself. I can feel it. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm one of those, you know. So can you talk a little bit about the different ones? Like maybe just say a little bit about, you know, the poet, the artist, the heretic, you know, anything that you might want to say that will allow people to kind of find themselves maybe a bit more in those archetypes or, you know, those ways of being.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've had so many people come back, Patricia, after and say, hey, wait a minute, this list needs to include these other people. And of course, my answer is yes. Yes, of course, it should include everyone else, you know, who is creating from a deep and authentic place. But so these archetypes are, you know, they're placeholders and they represent sort of the spectrum, the palette of colors that we can all fit on in some way. For me, though, they do express, they do represent, the writers represent those who get in touch with the muse and express it verbally, or, you know, or in writing. The musicians, they express soul in a way that touches emotions deeply. poets mm-hmm. tend to then speak in symbol, and they dip their words in feeling, if you will. Mm-hmm. painters show us pictures of things. But then the heretics are interesting for me, because that covers such a lot of territory, and it feels like that, for me, they represent the heartbeat of everyone who has ever questioned the status quo down through history. And so that, to me, becomes a greater catch-all than any one of these others, because you can find heretics in business and politics right now, and across the spectrum, you can find people who are standing up and looking at the status quo and saying, wait a minute, I see the world through different eyes, and I want to show you what I'm talking about. In the past, we used to just, burn them. Or hang them or something. Right now, it's actually safer to be a heretic than ever before. In fact, we both desperately need it, and we want it.
Mm-hmm. No, interesting. I can totally, the piece that I can relate to for sure in this is especially the heretic, because I feel spiritually, sort of spiritually and in the domain of consciousness, the wave, the way I see the high tide from the particular angle, the little piece angle that I've got is, we've had thousands of years of, since the beginning of, like religion and philosophy, there's been like this individual focus of attention, of awakening, and mostly it's been described by men. Men have determined religion and philosophy and, all of that stuff, all of the, most of it has been shaped by a particular perspective. And it's thousands of years. And I feel like we're with the internet and with, I spoke with Dr. Carl Johan Kalaman recently, and he's like a Mayan calendar. He understands the movement of all that. So he has a different angle of, just the way he's saying the same thing, you're saying the same thing, I'm saying the same thing. A lot of other people are saying is this is a different wave in history, and it's going to be expressed. And, when somebody stands up and says, don't we want to be deeply meditative like Buddha? I say, I don't know, maybe not. Maybe there's something else that the divine is interested in at this point. We've already had that. It doesn't mean we don't want to continue to cultivate, certain kinds of depth and peace and consciousness, but consciousness evolves. And ways of becoming awakened evolve. It isn't just, the way the mystics did it since forever. Maybe there's a new kind of mysticism. Maybe there's a new way of, having your eyes open and being awakened into love and connectedness with a bunch of other people at the same time, so you can move about the world in full flow, without having to go off somewhere. So that's my heretical piece that seems to keep coming through.
I love that.
It's different. It's kind of like, and then when my mind says that, I'm like, what? There's lineage and there's this and there's all of these things that one respects. And, of course the Buddha said it and this one and all of that is true. Is that only truth? Is that the only way in which consciousness is going to descend in and through us? I don't think so. Not with 7.4 billion people. There's got to be other ways to hook up on the planet that have to do with some way of being together. So I want to I just wanted to throw that in. But what I want to ask you, you say that you had a quote from Osho, who I spent a little bit of time with. Creativity is the greatest rebellion. Mm-hmm. So do you want to speak more about, the dimension of creativity and how you see that in this time of unprecedented change? How do you see creativity differently too?
It's pretty interesting you bring up Osho, and cool that you got to spend time with him. Of course, I never had that chance, but I read your ebook prior to this. Kyle supplied me with that, and I really loved the exploration that you've been on and that you're sharing, Patricia. And I feel, okay, so look, all of this stuff, we're talking about the passing away right now. We're talking about the passing away of all of these stories. And it's not that they're going to be necessarily completely demolished, because I think humanity would really lose itself or end itself. We have to retain, and we will retain, threads from the old stories, from this patriarchal story that's been told for the last 8,000 or whatever years. But but I can feel it going away. I can observe it in my own children. I can certainly observe it myself, but I watch my children and the generations who were not brought up as I was. Even though my parents were hippies when I was born, you know, they quickly moved into a fundamentalist cult of Christianity. And so I experienced life through this very rigid framework. And so I feel like we're right in that space. So, you know, to hear you, you pick up that quote from Osho, that creativity is the greatest rebellion. I mean, I wasn't a very rebellious child. The oldest of six, I was conformist. I wanted to make sure that people, you know, were well taken care of around me and all of this. So I was kind of the responsible kid, but I had these rebellious impulses that simply wouldn't stop asking questions inside of the framework I was raised in, inside of this religion. So, you know, I would go and poke around in Eastern religions and poke around with questions of quantum physics and things that I didn't even know where they came from. And it wasn't safe. It wasn't safe, Patricia, inside of that framework. And so I remember feeling this urgency to start asking these questions. And part of what, you know, one of the deep questions, you know, Osho in his teaching and his life was, you know, I'm sitting here talking to you about some, you know, you've met this person, but he challenged sexual norms. He challenged relationship norms in extremely deep ways. And I feel like that's one of the big stories. I know we could spend many shows talking about just that one thing, but that I feel like is one of the big questions. How am I going to be in relationship to the world, to myself, to other, going forward? Because the previous stories of all of those questions carried such tremendous weight when it came to the dogma about how it's supposed to be. And I feel like we're in a very confusing time right now because we're letting go of some of all of those things. And we're trying to ask the question of what does come next and what does still work for me as a human being who does have needs, you know, a feeling of belonging and acceptance. And we can bounce out and have all these new age floaty ideas about, oh, I'm whole and complete myself. Yeah, I'm also human and my body needs to eat and it needs touch and it needs affection. And I do have these, you know, things that aren't just, you can't just bounce out to some cosmic place and get those things. So it's a really interesting dichotomy, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I love what you're pointing to, because it was, he was a rat. He was a total heretic. I think truthfully, you know, just as a quick share, you know, when he would do his talks in front of the room and there'd be thousands of us there listening and falling all over each other, you know, kind of bathed in his brilliance and his particular transmission. But he was always poking at everything. Do you know what I mean? I think he had all those Rolls Royces just to prove that a guru didn't have to look at, you know, he was being rebellious about being a guru, actually.
Mm-hmm.
He actually said he would have run around and had all kinds of wild, you know, he just didn't have enough energy to be a complete, you know, like to make love to millions of women, because he just didn't have it, you know. But anyway, no, he was really funny. But I think here's one of the things. So this could be an interesting exploration together, you know, given your perspectives and what you see, and then what we're experimenting with in the Evolutionary Collective with, you know, all of your favorite people, the renegades and the mystics. So looking at Maslow's hierarchy, you know, what we're looking at, you know, so obviously, you know, getting your basic needs met and making sure, you know, that there's food and stuff like that. And then safety, you know, almost even re-looking at what is safety? You know, so if you're in relationship or you're in with a group of people and you're like, and you begin to colonize this new paradigm, you know, what we're listening to, what we're getting pieces of, then what does safety look like? What does it feel like? You know, how do you know you're safe inside of a more elevated consciousness in a different paradigm? Like safety in the Middle Ages looked different than it does now.
Mm-hmm.
Emotionally, you know, to be emotionally safe then, I don't even think they were asking that question. You know, it's like the Lord of the center can come with your wife. And that was considered normal. And we would not feel safe in a situation like that. So safety is one, but belonging, I think, is the most interesting, because what I feel like we're experimenting with and discovering is people like you, people like me, people that are hearing something different, you know, a different drummer. We do need to belong. And in fact, belonging, if you look at, you know, from spiral dynamics perspective, you know, if you go into like a higher level of cultural development, you actually need to belong with each other. You need to create together. You need to discover each other so that we can actually not just be personally and individually successful, but come together in new ways. You know, I call them thought babies, you know, to create babies of a different sort. You know, it isn't just you being individually brilliant or me being individually brilliant. It's like, how do we come together and make things together? Like when people make children. But so the belonging that includes not sacrificing oneself for some kind of normality, but rather belonging that evokes and supports the deepest level of distinctness and uniqueness that is possible within each one of us, and creates a space within which that to be illumined and met would be a new kind of belonging.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to a good friend of mine a couple of days ago, and we were discussing relationships. You know, we're each in our 40s. I guess he's turning 40 this year, and you know, have been through marriages and various forms of relationship. And I think there's sometimes at least between him and me, there's this tendency to say, okay, well, I can go away and do my work and do deep introspective work, and then I'll go back out and try to have a, you know, relationship in a more healed way, you know, so I don't carry all my wounds forward. And, you know, and I was laughing with him, and like, you know, there's this sort of perfectionistic idea that I can go do it by myself. And I feel like it's really in error. And I ran across this statement from Bruce Lee, and he says, self-knowledge involves relationship. To know oneself is to study oneself in action with another person. Relationship is a process of self-evaluation and self-revelation, and relationship is the mirror in which you discover yourself. To be is to be related. And I feel like, Patricia, that's where we are right now in so many different ways, not just in romantic relationships or whatever, but really in general in the world, is how, like, I can't do this alone. Right. I must have the mirror of other people and have my unconscious and my shadow brought up in relationship to others, because I can't see it on my own. Wherever I turn my awareness, my consciousness, that is the light. And that, you know, as soon as I turn my head toward the shadow to look at it, no matter how much I want to, it runs away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Well, and,
so the,
and.
So the, yeah.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was going to say, so the treasure in a relationship, even though these things can be painful, is that the other becomes this mirror who shows me what I can't see, the shadow.
Right. Well, and I want to include, you know, I completely agree, you know, that the emphasis, so I'm just that much older than you, right? And so, you know, I kind of came of age at exactly the time that the last 40-something years of self-exploration woke up. Okay, so, you know, if you watch Mad Men, you know, it's pretty clear that their interior was not well developed.
Right.
You know, they were drinking, and I mean, they just didn't look, they weren't awake to, you know, their kind of really inner world at all. And, you know, I was the same age as that little girl in the TV show. So, you know, went to Woodstock at 15. So it was this journey in the last 40 something years that you two were also pointing to, of it's all within you. You need to look at your stuff. You need to take responsibility. You need to heal. You need to this, that, and the other thing, which is obviously wildly important. You know, I mean, to be unexamined and, you know, to assume that somehow the other person is going to, you know, that you're going to show all of your stuff and then they're going to love you unconditionally is, you know, kind of not necessarily the best way to be in a relationship. But that's not it either. I mean, here's, you know, in the next paradigm, you know, like what we're pointing to, what we're sensing and what you're sensing in the way that I hear you expressing it in the book and just in having a conversation with you is there's something else. You know, there's something that, even if you're really like one of the, a friend, this will make the example is a friend went to, a conference, you know, that had the Dalai Lama and Deepak Chopra and, you know, very, very amazing luminaries, at least in my world, right? You know, in the spiritual side of things. And everyone thinks like, you know, if you were as developed as the Dalai Lama, and if I was as developed as that, then life would work, right? You know, if individually we made it to that kind of success, you know, the success of being truly like a saint, then this world would be a different world. And I agree it would to a large degree. You know, if we didn't have really crazy people, it would be helpful. But what he said was, you know, what he said was when he was there, he thought something extraordinary would happen because of the quality of the consciousness of the people. And what he was surprised about was that nothing that much happened. You know, I mean, people transmitted and individually, you know, did what they did, but nothing was happening between them. And so when I heard that, I thought it's not that we need to be that much more developed. It's that the space between us is not awake. We're not paying attention to what's happening between us. What's the between? Which is actually everything, you know, according to physics, there is no you and me. You know, there's only betweenness. You know, exchanging is the only thing they can point to. In reality, in physics, there's no there. There's no little particles that are like looking at each other. You know, there's only exchanging. So we're actually, if we were to move into the new science, you know, if we were, our consciousness was to replicate the reality that they really are seeing to be the truth, then what we would be aware of is relatedness, influence, the dance, like the something that's happening that's different between you and me than it would be between you and someone else. It's a different wine.
So it's funny as you're speaking this, it's I went to a performance recently, where Julian Sands was, performing a lot of Harold Pinter poems and telling stories of his friend. But there was this short one. He opened and closed the whole evening with this. Patricia, he said, "I know the place. It is true. Everything we do corrects the space between death and me and you." And what you just said about
I love that.
The space between, isn't that amazing, right?
Say it again.
Yeah, I know the place, and it is true. Everything we do corrects the space between death and me and you.
Wow. I love
poets. I feel pretty strongly that that's what we're doing right now. And what you just, I mean, you awakened that memory by saying, you know, this space between us that needs to be awakened. And I feel strongly that that's what we're doing in the world in general as a collective. And I can't, you know, it's fun to talk about the collective, but what I have to do is say, you know, like in the Hermetic tradition, as above, so below. And I have to go, you know, I'm a piece of the whole. And so therefore my relationship with my own children and my own self and my other, the space between us, as I can awaken to that, as I can open myself and become porous to this moment and to this very one between you and me right now, Patricia, here we are having this moment. We can sit here and talk at each other, or we can sit here and have a space of awakening. And here we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was interesting when you read the poem the second time. I could actually feel us go there. Like we're actually in a different space right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm sure people can feel that. You know, it's like, it's just different, you know, then the quality is not even reciprocity. It's interpenetration. Like you're more in me and I'm more in you. And then the conversation, you know, unfolds even more from there. It's cool.
Well, and there's this, yeah, it is cool. And there's this sense of, I have a number of friends, and we've never been physically intimate like we would use that word. Mm-hmm. But in fact, some of them I've never met in person, but we have this space of tremendous intimacy whenever we talk. Mm-hmm. That is alive, just like what you described. Like you and I made this shift into this no longer a host of a radio show and a guest and having this, you know, agenda. It's more like, okay, what's alive in this moment right here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. So, you know what I'm going to have to do though? So you and I are going to stay together. We're just going to take a super short break and then I'll be back with Jacob Nordby. Hi everybody. It's Patricia Albert and I'm here with Jacob Nordby, who wrote just the most wonderful book, Blessed Are the Weird, A Manifesto for Creatives. And, we're kind of in the exploring, I think something new. Like, how is it that the people who have always, I believe, brought through heaven on earth, and usually at some joy and cost individually, how does it arise through the space between us? How do we get to belong? And as you were saying, Jacob, you have three kids. I have a son, you know, in our lives, in every relationship. And then in also, you know, the joy of actually being with the others, who are hearing and wanting to, you know, like you were saying with your friend, like, what's this? Like, you know, you and I could have a conversation of like, oh, I just noticed this glimmer of something. And I could share that with you without having any conclusion, without even having the right words for it. And then you might go, yeah, there's like this. And we can begin to, give form, you know, give shape through our own lives. I mean, I consider that, from the consciousness part, you know, that's the art form that we're working, that it's actually an art form at this point. It's not even about healing. I mean, healing happens, but it's actually, we're working with consciousness. We are being consciousness like an art form, it doesn't have some other practical purpose.
Yeah, Patricia, I feel like that's where art comes from, that space, that void. And it's not, of course, it's a void that's filled with great wisdom and beauty. But the part of the reason why we've struggled as humanity, I feel, down through all these many thousands of years, is because we have been creating largely most of the mechanical world that we've created is this. It's because we've been trying, you know, let's refer back to Maslow's hierarchy now. We've been trying to protect ourselves against the vicissitudes of nature and each other, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now we've reached a time where I feel like we have greater certainty of our food supply and water supply. I mean, of course, people can look out at the world right now and just, there's this terrifying picture. But there's also, within that, there's also, we've never had a better, a more certain basic kind of survival needs met. And so I feel that we are asking ourselves to take a step further into something that is possible. And part of the reason we've struggled so much with that is we've been creating from fight or flight. The old limbic system has been, you know, and therefore we use the linear sort of the left brain mind to come up with solutions to protect ourselves. Now we're in this space, and this is where it loops back around to intimacy, where we're in this space of saying, if I open up my eyes to a larger window, if I can see the world through different eyes, I can include a true space of understanding, of compassion, of intimacy, even with those who hold ideas that are so radically different from mine. And then in that space, we can actually give birth to, or at least gestate, ask the questions of what is possible if both of us have something to bring to the table. And to give an example of this, I was speaking with my younger brother the other day, and he's, you know, he's a real conservative guy. Trump got brought up, and I have a very strong feeling about Donald Trump, and started talking about immigration, all these things. And at some point, I raised my hand and said, what if we took the personality, this sort of figurehead, out of the conversation, Donald Trump, and we just talked about the ideas that we're discussing, because I feel like there's a lot of common ground. And he and you know, not that I'm so conscious, you know, my mother was sitting there, and she had some good things to say. And we did. We agreed to set aside this personality issue and enter into intimacy. And it was fascinating that there was so much ground for creative solution making between the two of us at that point, saying, well, yeah, no, we actually don't want to do this, this, and this, and we do want to include these things. But taking out that fight or flight, like, okay, you have this idea, therefore I must defend mine and defeat yours. Taking that out, that is where I feel we are trying to go in individual relationships, in political relations, all these things. I feel like that's what we're asking ourselves to do, whether we can or not yet. I don't know, Patricia. I'm really curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. I mean, you also, the way that you just described that, it's so clear that from a larger context, then the polarities can exist and find something possible. You know, you took it out of just the two of you and you made a third. You created a third something that could hold it, which is really, really powerful. Yeah. And a connection from very interesting. No, I mean, from a deeper place. Cause I also think, you know, like if you use the baby metaphor, you know, if you connect from the deepest DNA, like the deepest DNA of who we are as human beings, which you were like saying, let's go deeper. Let's find this deeper place where we can actually connect. You know, a Republican and a Democrat can, if they don't talk, they could make a baby. No problem, right? I mean, they could be completely enemies and they could come together, make love and have a baby. I mean, that actually is part of as above, so below. So there's something about that that we should be listening to. You know, if we can go to a deeper place and connect, there's some birth that can be born through very, very different personality types and belief systems, which are all a lesser. You know, those are all added things. They're not essential. You know, they're not like at the core of who we are. So,
I'm getting more comfortable with creative conflict, I feel, is really good. In that, you know, I mean, chaos is the birthplace of creativity, of art, of beauty. But it doesn't feel comfortable when it's happening at all. And so, you know, zooming way, way, way out, we can look at this time of great foment in our world, in our country as, you know, something different in the middle of it. It feels like there's a lot of energy of pain and anger, and there is, I mean, I can feel it, you know, but then zooming way out, there's this sort of blossoming flower of something really amazing. Like if we could zoom out several light years away and somehow have a visual image of the energy that is happening on Earth right now, Patricia, I feel like we would see it as not even a fireworks show, but an actual, a gorgeous blossom of something new happening here. And it's hard. And I don't like to get all floaty and cosmic about things that are, you know, cause these things are affecting people's everyday lives in my life. But to occasionally bounce out and say, okay, how do I see the beauty in what's happening? How can I meet then myself and those I run into every day, some of whom I might, you know, be tempted to view as enemies? How can I meet them in a different way today?
Yeah, definitely. No, that's beautiful. Let me ask you, from your work in your book, how do you suggest, because people have what what has been termed the superego, you know, we have sort of this overriding inner coercive conversational agent in our heads that, you know, knows how to imitate our voice and tell us, you know, what we should or shouldn't be doing. And, you know, it's trying to keep us in some kind of normal safe zone of some sort. And creatives have to, you know, if you want to listen to something that is truly new and truly unique and truly your own, you know, you can't be completely controlled by that. So what advice do you give people of how do they support and give birth to their own weirdness, you know, their own gorgeous, you know, uniqueness and weirdness, which is so needed at this time.
Mm-hmm. Wow, such a big question. So it was funny, Patricia, when I put this thing out, the little thing that started all this, and then people began to show up and say, you know, I became known as the weird guy. And so that was then any people would show up on Facebook and post, you know, whatever, with anything that had the word weird in it, you know, they just thought, oh, this, he's going to love this. And the answer is really, I don't. A lot of it's just irritating.
Right.
But, because it's not the question of, let me show how weird I am. It's the question of, for me, is, you know, and there's a chapter in the book that says, you know, you might be a weird person if. One of the most important things that I've come to when it comes down to this thing is, I mean, there's sort of a list of some characteristics, but when it comes right down to the bottom line, I feel that people who are willing to step outside the reality tunnel that has been created, and you use the word superego, which I also like, people who are willing to sort of see a window larger than or off to the side of what the usual collective agreement is, we have this absolute insatiable quality that says we have an abnormal desire for what is real. And we are going to follow that as deeply, no matter how dark the rabbit hole gets, when we go down it, we're just going to keep going. Because to do anything less is to admit not only defeat, but also it's basically saying, okay, I just have to give up and live a life that's less than what's possible. And so when people come to me, and sometimes they do, and say, you know, how do I do this? Or the real question for me is, what is your soul trying to say? And then to make that a little bit less floaty sounding, what is the raw desire inside of you that will not be silenced, that can't be shut up? What is that? And if we can find that raw heartthrob of what is real inside of that somewhere, then, and listen to it, and then find out where it's going. And to the degree that it takes me away from where I have been, the story I've been living, I don't see any value in just burning down a life just because I want to say I'm going to go live and be a bohemian and, you know, live this. No, all I care about is, where does what's real and what's alive inside of me take me away from where I have been? I woke up at age 34 in 2007, Patricia, 240 pounds. I had several businesses that looked very successful from the outside. I had $500,000 in debt and a big house and all this stuff. And I was so far from what was truly alive inside of me at that point that it required a nervous breakdown and a shamanic breakthrough and all this crazy stuff to go and actually find a path. And it's taken, you know, a decade since then now to feel like I'm getting anywhere near being able to live in, on a daily basis, anything that resembled what I felt from back then and looking back 10 years and the guy, you know, from that perspective, I couldn't hardly imagine how I could find that place. It just felt so far away. The path with heart, you know, and how to get there from all the entanglements that I had. So I don't know if I'm answering your question, but it feels like if I can help, and it really isn't up to me at all, if I can stand here and maybe be an example of sometimes, but really people have to find out what is alive inside of me and then just keep following that, because it's only, because sometimes people will say, how do I change my life? And I'll say, well, the first thing to know is, if you can possibly help it, don't. Don't start if you can possibly help it. It's not cool. It's not fun. We don't do it to get rich or get laid or get famous.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
right.
Don't do that. Right. It's not worth it. Not worth it. Yeah.
Right. No, I get that. What allowed you? I mean, obviously there was a big break. What gave you the day by day courage? Because when you have a big complicated life and it's not working, it is a big deal to unravel that. What gave that to you? What allowed you to find your way through? You know, what did you have support from other people? What in yourself? What was around you?
Patricia, people would come and tell me, you're so brave. And I would say, you know, and I meant it, and I still do. I'm not brave at all. I'm only doing what I have to do right now. And I feel like what gave me the courage to keep going was that for the first time in my entire life, I didn't feel like a fraud. Every time, everything I'd ever done before that, no matter how real it actually was, I had felt like a fraud. And for the first time in my life, something felt real inside. And I felt like I could breathe and I could feel that freedom was in there, even when I was, you know, depressed and afraid and broke and all of the things that happened after that for a long time. That was the tiny little spark in the darkness, you know, that kept me going. Is okay, but this is somehow it's real. I don't even know where it's going or what it is, but it's real.
Got it. Oh God, I can feel that in my heart.
Yeah.
That, you know, the desire, I think, like you were saying with our children, like if we can do anything, is to help support the hunger for what's real and authentic, that's more important than, quote, you know, whatever the ideas of success or the ideas of whatever. Because you know, you put together a, quote, successful life. You know, you had all that beautiful energy, but it was oriented towards something that had nothing, you know, that wasn't aligned with the beauty and the depth of who you are.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, well-meaning parents, you know, we just don't realize, you know, that we need like a different way to listen to our children to make sure that they can stay alive kind of all the way through. It's amazing.
Yeah,
but
I'm
hear
not
you.
Sure why, yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure why this is asking for my attention, but I feel like I need to say it. And, you know, I haven't done this by design, but certainly a lot of people who have gathered around and talked to me on a regular basis are female. And I just want to take a moment and really honor the tremendous courage that women are showing right now around the world in stepping up and taking leadership. And it looks different right now than it did during my mother's, you know, teenage years and Gloria Steinem and some of these, all these beautiful leaders who have stepped forward. I just want to say that we're in a cutting edge time, and it's not good enough to destroy the patriarchy. It's time to and reestablish a matriarchy, shall we say. But I just really, I watch the beauty and the power of what's happening. And women are really leading this right now. And I love that. I so appreciate it. And it's, I don't know why, but it just called my attention to say something about it, like to really honor that creative energy. And I think maybe it's because you started the show by talking about how it's been primarily masculine, but I really feel like, and it's not a matter of excluding, you know, men and the masculine at all. I mean, here I am, a guy talking about this, but I just really want to say thank you to everyone who has the courage. I see women stepping up politically and in the arts and in business right now, and you're helping us. You're helping an old version of the world see itself through a different window, through new eyes. And that's art. That's beautiful.
Yeah, thank you. I think it is. And you're right. It's a very, very different movement than like the Gloria Steinem. You know, they had to break through something. But this one feels, I mean, just as a woman who, you know, who is a, you know, a leader of some, you know, of some sort, I think that the way I feel it is the longing, and when men, you know, like yourself, like when we can come together and there's a fullness of being heard, there's an evocation of what we can see and bring, but then there's also this love affair, you know, there's like support, and there's stuff that, you know, I'm recently in a new relationship with a really powerful, beautiful man who was part of all Werner's work. He was a trainer way back when, so we met each other in our 20s, right? And he's just, you know, I mean, men can do things. I mean, you guys are wired like to just get up underneath the world and build things and do things. That is just, it's extraordinary. You know, I mean, it's just like mind-blowing. And I'm not, you know, I don't even know if I want to be good at that. You know, I mean, I can do a little bit of that, you know, but there's something about like a husband and wife, you know, I mean, there's something about together raising your children, you know, and in new ways and in new possibilities, in different ways that masculine and feminine dance together. But I don't want to lead alone. I want to be together in a new way with the men of the world. So we can actually, I don't know, heaven on earth is still on the agenda. I mean, I don't think the divine has changed its mind on that. So, you know, I think that's still the mission here. And, I definitely feel like there's a, you know, it's about, like you said, it's about relatedness and it's about giving birth to something together, not one or the other leading for sure. So I appreciate your saying that. Yeah, you know, and who wants to do it alone anyway? I mean, we want to be one, you know, we want to just have the whole thing be such an exquisite expression of love and work and creativity that, who is it? Maybe you're the poet. Okay. I think Walt Whitman said there was something like, we were together. I don't remember the rest.
Yeah, I don't know that one. That sounds beautiful.
Kind of like that. I think in the end, that's like, you know, like it's what the other man said and then that, you know, it's like we were together and I don't remember the rest.
Yeah. So anyway. It's interesting, you know, the polarity is a hermetic principle. And it's, the idea that we can flatten out the polarity between masculine and feminine, however that shows up in whichever body that shows up in, you know, we need that. That's the magnetic pole that keeps stuff going and that makes electricity and all sorts of life. So, yeah.
Yeah, totally. So I want to thank you again. So Jacob Nordby, Blessed Are the Weird, a manifesto for creatives. Please go to Amazon, and also his website is easily www.blessedaretheweird.com. So that should be easy to find. I really want to thank you so much just for the courage, you know, as an individual finding your way through, and then just your art. You know, the fact that your artistry and your way of being a poet and working with words is just enviable. I mean, it's just really beautiful. So I'm grateful that you have that gift. So thank you, everyone. And thank you, Jacob.